Chapter 21. The Mirror.
What?
Alex said. Her head was throbbing from being so confused.
This doesn't make any sense. It needed a fairy's tear.
We can't let this happen, Connor screamed.
We have to stop her. She can't use the wishing spell.
The twins struggled and fought against the ropes, but there's nothing they could do. It was too late. The light rose off the wishing spell items and began to circle around the evil queen.
No!
Connor screamed.
Please don't!
Alex yelled. The evil queen took a deep breath.
Wishing spell. I wish to free the man in the mirror, she said.
The light shot toward the mirror like lightning. The whole mirror was consumed in light for a few moments before it faded. The glass melted away like ice on a warm day. The mirror looked like a doorway into a very dark room. The twins waited with anticipation. The evil queen walked over to the mirror, keeping a cautious distance away from it, but nothing happened. She got closer to the mirror, so close that the twins wondered if she was going to climb into it.
Mira?
The evil queen asked. Suddenly, a man fell out of the mirror and onto the floor. His eyes were closed, and he was breathing very heavily. He was pale and seemed paralyzed. It was as if he had just awoken from a coma. The man was the plainest person the twins had ever seen. He had no distinctive characteristics whatsoever. He had spent so much time reflecting others that he had lost himself completely.
Where am I?
The man said between deep breaths. He had enough energy to keep one eye open at a time, but not both. The evil queen picked up her heart of stone, and the twins could see the change in her face as her body was reunited with its soul. She was a different person. She was a person.
Mira, it's me. It's Evely. You're free,
the evil queen said. Her voice was different while she held the stone. She spoke softly, with love and affection. Tears poured down her face. The twins could see the reflection of the evil queen and the man in the mirror of truth. The reflections weren't those of the pale man and hooded woman who were actually in the room with them. They were of two young people. One was the beautiful girl the evil queen had once been, and the other, a very handsome young man that Mira must have been before being imprisoned in the mirror. Evely cradled Mira in her arms and slowly rocked him.
You're free, Mira. You're free, she repeated softly. I freed you just like I promised. I'm so sorry it took me as long as it did.
The man opened both his eyes and stared up at her. She had only freed the very little of him that was left. The rest had faded away a long time ago.
Evely,
he said, and a slight smile appeared on his face, recognizing the name. The smile lasted only a moment. His eyes fluttered shut, and he stopped breathing.
Mira?
The evil queen asked.
Mira!
Mira didn't move. He was as lifeless as he looked. His reflection disappeared entirely from the golden mirror.
No,
the evil queen said.
No!
But tears were running down much faster now.
Come back! Please, come back!
Alex and Connor became emotional at the sight of it. The evil queen held the body of the man from her mirror in a tight embrace. She sobbed into him, still holding on to the heart of stone. She had worked her entire life for this, but she was too late. The wolves were starting to become impatient outside the castle. Many were pacing back and forth across the drawbridge, others were lying across the entrance corridor, and one was sharpening his teeth with Goldilocks' sword. They had been waiting long enough for the evil queen, and they growled and grunted with restlessness. Suddenly, Malamclaw's ears perked up, and he looked into the horizon. The ground was vibrating as something large was traveling their way.
What is that?
He asked. A cavalcade of soldiers stampeded toward the castle at full speed. The soldiers were dressed in silver and green armor and came from the Northern Kingdom. They were led by Froggy and Sir Grant, sharing a horse. Jack was riding Porridge beside them. All the wolves jumped up.
All right, boys. We're done waiting for the queen,
Malamclaw said.
We're going inside to get Red Riding Hood, and then we're getting out of here.
All the wolves obediently howled, and they ran into the castle. One of them pulled a lever with his mouth, raising the drawbridge. The soldiers assembled on the edge of the moat.
The evil queen is in there, Froggy said to Sir Grant. The wolves are working for her. They took my friends.
Evil queen,
Sir Grant called out with his booming voice.
This is Sir Grant of Her Majesty Queen Snow White's Royal Guard. You have 30 seconds to surrender, or we will open fire on the castle.
The soldiers aligned a row of cannons. Jack hopped off Porridge and found Goldilocks' sword on the ground. She was in there.
Prepare the cannons,
Sir Grant ordered, and his soldiers positioned the cannons facing the castle.
Fire!
A cannon blasted the raised drawbridge into pieces. The entire castle rattled from the hit.
Prepare to fire again,
Sir Grant ordered.
Hold your fire, Jack yelled. There are innocent people in that castle. You mustn't fire until we can safely get them out of there. I have reason to believe Queen Red Riding Hood may be inside.
Grant looked fearful. He couldn't have the death of an innocent queen on his hands.
You have 10 minutes before we open fire, Grant told Jack. Get in there and save as many people as you can.
Jack nodded without hesitation. If the woman he loved was in harm's way, nothing would stop him from saving her.
I'll go with you,
Froggy said, secretly alarmed at his own bravery, which had suddenly swept over him.
You may need a hand.
He and Froggy hopped onto Porridge. The horse took a few steps back and then charged toward the castle, jumping over the moat and through the large opening where the drawbridge had been a moment before. The castle's dungeon was small, but it had a row of several small cells. Goldilocks and Red Riding Hood's robes and gags had been removed, but they were each put in their own cell, mostly so Goldilocks wouldn't kill Red before the wolves had their chance. The huntsman and the huntress watched over them like father and daughter hawks.
I just don't understand why my army hasn't rescued me yet. Shouldn't that be their top priority?
Red whined.
If I was Cinderella, none of this crap would be happening.
I outran your army because, like most things about you and your kingdom, they're slow, Goldilocks said. Besides, they've probably already elected a new queen by now.
That's not funny, Red said. This has been the worst day of my entire life. I didn't even know it was possible to be kidnapped twice in one day.
The wolf stormed into the dungeon. Red went white with fear.
Soldiers are invading the castle,
Malumclaw said.
We're not waiting for the evil queen any longer. We're taking Red Riding Hood now.
Get the queen,
the huntsman said to his daughter. The huntress nodded and ran down to the opposite side of the dungeon and up a small stone staircase. She looked back before climbing it, not sure if leaving her father alone was a good idea.
No! Red screamed. You can't let them take me!
She looked all over the dungeon, unsure who she was talking to. She didn't have any friends in here.
I'm ready for this day to be over!
Fine, you can take her,
the huntsman said to the wolves. He unlocked her cell, and Red jumped up and pushed the door open, knocking the huntsman back into the wolves. She ran as fast as she could down to the other side of the dungeon and up the stone staircase the huntress had climbed.
After her!
Malumclaw ordered, and he and his pack ran after the young queen. She managed to get a head start as the wolves had trouble fitting into the staircase. Moments later, Jack and Froggy emerged into the dungeon. Jack was wielding Goldilocks' sword.
Stand back!
Jack yelled at the huntsman, who backed into a corner with his hands up.
Jack!
Goldilocks said, clutching the bars of her cell.
What are you doing here?
Porridge found me, Jack said. I knew something must be wrong, because you weren't with her. She led me here, and I met up with Snow White's army on the way.
They stared at each other so lovingly, it made Froggy uncomfortable.
Splendid! I'll find Queen Red Riding Hood and the twins while you reunite, he said, and hopped back in the direction they'd come from.
The huntsman pulled a crossbow out from under his fur coat.
Jack, watch out!
Goldilocks screamed. The huntsman began shooting arrows at Jack. He ducked and dived, barely eluding them. Goldilocks had to dodge the arrows, too. They were ricocheting off the stone walls in every direction. The huntsman moved like a machine, reloading his crossbow instantaneously each time he fired. Goldilocks picked up an arrow that had landed near her and began picking the lock of her cell with the arrowhead. Jack was trying to block the arrows with the sword. It was getting harder. The arrows were coming at him much faster. He hit one perfectly, and it flew behind the huntsman. The huntsman grunted and froze. His eyes bulged, and he fell flat on his face. The arrow had bounced off the wall behind him and was now sticking out of his back. The huntsman was dead.
Jack, behind you!
Goldilocks yelled. Jack turned around, and the huntress stabbed him in the arm with her dagger. She had seen the whole thing.
Ah!
Jack screamed. He dropped the sword and fell to the ground. He crawled across the floor and sat himself up against the wall. He was clutching his arm. Blood was everywhere. The huntress walked toward him with her dagger raised. She didn't speak, but she had pure rage in her eyes. As far as she was concerned, Jack had just killed her father. She swooped toward him for a fatal strike. Goldilocks blocked the dagger with her sword. She had picked the lock of her cell and repossessed her sword just in time to save Jack's life.
I think it's time you and I had a little girl talk, Goldilocks said, and kicked the huntress in the stomach.
The huntress rolled to the other side of the room and hopped back to her feet. Goldilocks and the huntress circled each other for a moment. They stared each other down, waiting for the other to make the first move. Goldilocks swung her sword at the huntress, and the duel began. The huntress only had a dagger half the size of Goldilocks' sword, but she used it well. Goldilocks had finally found her match. They moved all around the dungeon, each shielding offensive strikes from the other. The huntress cornered Goldilocks. Goldilocks ran up the wall and flipped over the huntress, cornering her now.
"Where did you learn to do that?" Jack asked.
"I'll tell you later," Goldilocks said. The huntress headbutted Goldilocks and ran out of the dungeon.
"Come back here,"
Goldilocks called out and chased after her. They continued their fight throughout the castle, climbing higher and higher as they went. Meanwhile, Red Riding Hood was being chased through the castle by the big bad wolf pack. She was running for her life, and tears were streaming down her face. She'd only been this scared once before, an infamous day when she'd visited her grandmother as a child. Red wasn't crying from fear alone, though. She was also upset that she was getting one of her favorite dresses ruined. Red also wished she'd chosen shoes better equipped for running when she dressed herself earlier that day. She reached one of the highest levels of the castle. Areas of the floor had rotted away, and she had to be very careful not to fall through any of the large holes that would drop her several stories below. The wolves behind her were not being so cautious. They had a hard time getting traction on the smooth wooden floor and kept sliding into the holes, howling as they fell to their deaths. Red ran up a wooden staircase. The upper half of the staircase crumbled away in front of her as she passed the landing.
"That's not good," Red said.
She looked back at the steps behind her and saw Malamclaw. She was trapped. The wolf made his way toward her, one step at a time, enjoying the aggravation it caused her.
"I've waited for this moment for over a decade," Malamclaw growled.
"Oh my, what big claws you have,"
Red said, trembling.
"The better to maul you with, my dear," Malamclaw said.
Red had never expected to die like this. She had always imagined it would be back in her castle, with dozens of her and Jack's children by her bedside.
"Oh my, what big teeth you have," Red said.
"The better to bite you with, my dear,"
Malamclaw said. He was just a few feet away. He arched his back, ready to pounce. Suddenly, a quiet, whistling sound came from outside the castle. A cannonball crashed through the wall and directly into Malamclaw. The stairs collapsed, and the wolf was knocked into the next room. If he had survived it, he wouldn't be in one piece.
"Oh my," Red said.
She grasped onto the banister of the stair landing as if her life depended on it. The steps on either side of her were gone. She was truly stuck now. The landing started to teeter. The wood below it was slowly starting to crumble.
"Oh my! Oh my! Oh my!"
Red screamed. The banister collapsed, and Red fell. She screamed the entire way down. Just a few seconds before Red was about to hit the floor, Froggy jumped into the air and caught the young queen. They both landed safely, courtesy of his strong frog legs.
"You saved my life,"
Red said, with big, thankful eyes.
"I don't believe we've been formally introduced, Your Majesty," Froggy said. "My name is..."
Froggy never got to finish. Red was repeatedly kissing his cheek. He turned dark green. Who knew a frog could blush? The castle began to shake as more cannons were fired.
"They're starting the attack," Froggy said. "We have to find Connor and Alex and get out of here."
Alex and Connor didn't know what was going on. All they could hear was the clanking of swords and the whimpering of wolves from outside the Great Hall, and the muffled announcements of the soldiers outside of the castle. They felt the castle shaking and falling apart around them. Cannonballs began bursting through the walls of the Great Hall. Big stone chunks of the ceiling began to fall around them. They knew they had to get out of the castle as fast as possible.
"Your Majesty,"
Alex asked the Evil Queen,
"we have to get out of here. The castle is falling apart."
The Evil Queen didn't respond. All she could do was cry over the body of her former lover.
"If we don't get out of here soon, we're going to make Humpty Dumpty's accident look like a scrape on the knee," Connor said.
The Evil Queen wasn't listening to them. She was so grief-stricken that she couldn't hear. She didn't even seem aware of what was happening to the castle.
"Evely, please! You need to untie us!"
Alex pleaded.
"Just drop the stone and you won't feel all the sadness!"
The doors into the Great Hall creaked open, and Froggy ran into the room. Red watched from the doorway, panicked by all the destruction.
"Froggy!" Connor yelled. "Untie us before we're crushed!"
"I'm coming, children!"
Froggy said. He hopped across the room and quickly began untying them as fast as he could. It was difficult, though. The knots were tight. He untied Connor first, and then the two worked together to free Alex.
"Please hurry,"
Red called out from the doorway.
"My castle's being remodeled, and I'd really like to see it before I die."
Alex was finally freed. Connor and Froggy ran toward the door,
But Alex went to the table and started putting all the wishing spell items back into her bag.
What are you doing?
Connor yelled. What part of imploding castle don't you understand?
I'm not leaving here without these, Alex said. We made promises to return and to destroy them, remember?
The wishing spell was starting to wear off on the magic mirror. The glass was starting to grow back. A cannonball hit the wall closest to the mirrors. The golden mirror was knocked over by the blast and shattered across the ground. The magic mirror started rocking, about to fall at any moment.
Evelie! Alex yelled. Please, come with us!
But she was ignored. The magic mirror fell on top of the Evil Queen and Mira and shattered into thousands of pieces on the ground. But the Evil Queen and Mira were nowhere to be found. The mirror had swallowed them just before it shattered. Alex ran over and started searching for any trace of the Evil Queen or Mira, but there was nothing to find, except bits of broken glass. The only thing Alex managed to find was the Evil Queen's Heart of Stone. Alex put the Heart of Stone in her bag. She turned to run toward the door with her brother and Froggy, but something else caught her eye on the floor. It was her reflection in a piece of the golden mirror. It was so bright and colorful, and she saw herself smiling in it. And there was something behind her, something moving, like wings.
Come on, Alex! Connor yelled. I don't want to be an only child!
Coming, Alex said. She ignored the glass and joined her brother, Froggy, and Red in the doorway of the crumbling Great Hall. They found Jack in the corridor outside the Great Hall, still holding onto his wounded arm. Porridge was impatiently waiting here, too, not wanting to leave without her mistress.
Jack!
Red said, and went to embrace him.
You came!
I didn't come here for you, Jack said,
and refused to let her touch him.
Where's Goldilocks?
Red put a hand on her chest and was short of breath. Pure heartbreak started to consume her like a delayed poison. He really was in love with Goldilocks.
Let me get everyone to safety, and then I'll go back for her, Froggy said. I'll go with you. Ah!
Jack had begun to speak, but screamed when he tried to move his arm.
No, you won't, Froggy said.
One by one, Froggy took hold of Alex, Connor, Red, and Jack, and leaped with them across the moat. Porridge took some convincing, but Jack coaxed her into hopping over the moat with them. They joined the soldiers, many of whom bowed upon seeing Queen Red Riding Hood.
Forgive my hair, gentlemen, Red said. It's been a rough day.
Where is the Evil Queen?
Sir Grant asked.
She's gone,
Alex said softly.
Gone?
He asked.
Yes, Alex said sadly. Trust me, you won't have to worry about seeing her again.
Sir Grant nodded. A huge weight had been lifted off his shoulders and the shoulders of his kingdom.
Where was Goldilocks when you last saw her?
Froggy asked Jack.
She was fighting that woman. I don't know where they went,
Jack said.
There she is,
Connor said, pointing upward. Everyone raised their heads to look. Near the very top of the castle, Goldilocks and the Huntress were still dueling, on the roof. No one could do or say anything. They all just watched the fight with their mouths and eyes wide open. Neither of the women seemed to have an advantage over the other. It was going to be a fight to the finish. The castle was disintegrating around them, but they kept fighting, each determined to kill the other. Their fight had turned into a battle. They swung their weapons toward each other, more violently than ever. Part of the roof near where they stood caved in, and Goldilocks lost her balance. She dropped her sword while trying to regain her footing. The Huntress saw this as an opportunity to strike. She raised her dagger high above her head. It was aimed for Goldilocks, and there was nothing she could do to defend herself.
No!
Jack yelled. He ran over to a cannon and lit it. He wrenched it toward the Huntress's direction and fired it. A cannonball soared toward the women and blasted away the section of the roof the Huntress was standing on. She fell the entire height of the castle and into the moat, silently screaming the entire way. There was no way she could have survived the fall. Goldilocks found her balance and lovingly looked down at Jack. They shared a moment of blissful eye contact before disaster struck again. Dust rose as the castle began to collapse completely underneath Goldilocks.
Goldilocks!
Jack yelled.
I can't watch,
Alex said, and buried her face in Connor's shoulder. It was hard to see anything through the dust. The sound was thunderous. Thousands upon thousands of stones were falling on top of one another. Many rolled over into the moat. The dust eventually cleared out once the stones had settled. The castle was now just a massive pile of stone bricks. Goldilocks was nowhere to be found.
Goldilocks!
Jack hollered, running along the edge of the moat, trying to find any trace of her. The odds didn't seem in her favor. Froggy jumped across the moat and disappeared into the debris. Everything was silent. The twins thought Jack was going to have a heart attack while waiting.
Every second that they didn't hear or see anything felt like an hour. Slowly but surely, two figures made their way through the wreckage. It was Froggy, and he was helping Goldilocks through the rubble. She was limping, but she was alive. The twins cheered, and Jack fell to his knees. They had never seen anyone so thankful in their lives. Froggy leaped over the moat with Goldilocks, and she and Jack collided into each other's arms. They shared a kiss so passionate that a few of the soldiers blushed. It was love personified. Red Riding Hood could feel her entire body ache with heartbreak while watching the scene. This may have been the only time she hadn't gotten what she wanted, and Jack had always been what she'd wanted more than anything. Porridge happily pranced over to Goldilocks, who petted her horse's mane.
"I'm all right, girl," Goldilocks said. "I'm just banged up a little."
"Goldilocks," Sir Grant called out officially. "You're under arrest."
"Wait a second, hold on," Jack said, standing in the way of the approaching guards. He turned and gave Red a scornful look.
"Do something!"
At first, Red didn't know what to say. She had never really done anything official and queen-like.
"The Red Riding Hood Kingdom would like to pardon Goldilocks for all her crimes she's committed," Red said, "and it's a very long list."
"That may be," Sir Grant said, "but you can't pardon all the crimes she's committed in other kingdoms. She's going to spend the rest of her life in prison. Seize her!"
Chapter 22. Snow White's Secret. The entire party traveled back to the Northern Kingdom in silence. The pattering of the horses' hooves on the road was the only sound the group made. The whole world seemed to sigh with relief now that the Evil Queen was gone. Goldilocks was given permission to ride Porridge back into the kingdom, but her hands and feet were wrapped in chains. An annoyed expression was frozen on her face. Jack faithfully walked by her side the entire trip, with his hand on top of the manacles around hers. Red Riding Hood watched them from afar, looking away only when someone noticed her staring at the couple. She had never experienced so many emotions at once. She remained silent and still, praying that the hurt would go away. The twins were especially quiet during the journey. After everything they had witnessed, it was hard to find words to express what they were thinking and feeling. Their thoughts were filled with the Evil Queen's story. They were haunted by the images of her holding the body of the man whom she had loved her entire life, before being consumed by the mirror. And while they were saddened by her tale, they were even more disappointed that the wishing spell was gone. They feared how long it would take for them to discover another way home. What obstacles and dangers would they have to endure when and if they found an alternative? What would they do in the meantime? Where would they live?
"I'm so sorry, children," Froggy said as they went. "I feel completely responsible. Had I just let you use the wishing spell, instead of persuading you to come with me, none of this would have happened."
"It isn't your fault, Froggy," Alex said. "The wolves would have gotten to us sooner or later."
"Actually, this whole thing is your fault," Connor said. "If you hadn't told us about the wishing spell, none of this would have happened in the first place. We would have never been chased by wolves, kidnapped by trolls, or targeted by the Evil Queen."
Froggy lowered his head. The guilt was heavy, and it weighed him down. Alex looked like she was about to punch Connor in the face.
"But," Connor said with a big cheesy smile, "you did save our lives like 3 times, so I think that makes up for it."
Froggy chuckled.
"You are more than welcome to live with me," he said. "I'll help you find another way home. I promise."
The twins nodded and smiled at him. It was comforting to know they had a place to live, even if it was just a hole in the ground. They traveled for a day and a half before they finally reached Swan Lake and arrived at Snow White's palace. Red Riding Hood seemed intimidated by a palace so regal and large.
"My castle's going to look just like this when it's finished," she told everyone around her, but no one seemed interested.
The soldiers immediately took hold of Goldilocks and escorted her to the dungeon.
"Wait a minute, you can't just throw her into captivity without a trial," Jack said.
"For her sake, I hope she never gets a trial," a soldier said.
"Go home, Jack," Goldilocks said. "With good behavior, they should let me out in a few decades."
Jack followed them anyway, protesting the entire time, but even he knew there's nothing he could do.
"Come with me," Sir Grant said to the twins. "We'll find the queen."
The twins, Red and Froggy, followed the soldier into the palace. They went up the staircase to the 3rd floor and down the hall to the door of what must have been the real entrance into the storage chamber. Grant knocked on the door.
"Your Majesty, it's Sir Grant. Are you in there?" he said.
"Yes, please come in," Snow White said from inside.
They all followed Sir Grant inside. The room looked completely different. All the furniture had been uncovered, and the paintings had been placed on the walls. It looked like an actual room again.
What are you two doing here?
Snow White asked. She was putting the portrait of the huntsman back on the wall. For the past couple of days, she had been restoring the room by herself.
Your Majesty,
Sir Grant said, lowering his helmet.
We found your stepmother hiding in a castle in the northeast sleeping kingdom.
And?
Snow White asked, bracing herself for the news.
She's dead,
Grant informed her. Snow White's face became paler, which the twins hadn't thought was possible. She sat down on the platform in the back of the room. She didn't cry, but anyone could tell it was difficult news to process.
How did it happen?
Snow White asked. Grant looked down at the twins.
I wasn't there, but they saw it happen,
he said.
She didn't die, per se, Alex said, trying to put it delicately. The castle was falling apart, and her mirror, well, it...
It fell on top of her and swallowed her like a bug. Boom! And then she disappeared, Connor said excitedly. It was crazy. There was nothing left.
Alex gave her brother a dirty look.
Well, not necessarily, she said.
Alex reached into her bag and pulled out the heart of stone. Snow White gasped upon seeing it. Alex walked across the room and handed Snow White her stepmother's heart.
This was left behind, Alex said. I think you should have it.
Snow White looked down at the stone, and tears spilled out of her eyes.
Sir Grant, I'd like to be alone with the children, Snow White said. Please arrange rooms for the others if they'd like to stay,
she said, nodding to Red and Froggy.
Why, thank you, Your Majesty,
Froggy said, and bowed.
That's very nice, thank you, Red said. Maybe just until my palace is done being rebuilt. I'm putting in a room just like this one.
Sir Grant ushered them out of the chamber before Red could finish. The twins were left alone with Snow White. She was very quiet for the first few moments. All she could do was stare down at the stone.
I guess you didn't listen to my advice then, Snow White said.
We listened, Connor said. We just ignored it.
Do you know what this is?
Snow White asked them, holding up the heart of stone.
Yes, Alex told her. It's her heart. She told us all about it and about her life before she was, well, the Evil Queen.
It was one heck of a story, too, Connor said. Did you know that guy in her magic mirror was actually her long-lost boyfriend?
Yes, I did, Snow White said. That's why I helped her escape.
Both of the twins gasped and shook their heads in disbelief. They couldn't have heard her correctly.
What?
Alex asked. You helped her escape?
No way, Connor said.
Yes, Snow White said. She showed no remorse in her confession. I sat in her cell for hours and listened to her story. It broke my heart. So, in a final attempt to please her, I arranged for her and Hamira to be taken up the river into the next kingdom so she could continue her work.
The twins couldn't believe it. They wanted to ask so many questions, but only grunts and light stutters came out of their mouths.
All these years I wondered why she didn't love me, and then I finally understood it. It was because she couldn't, Snow White said. I thought a heart as broken as hers was punishment enough for her crimes against me.
Did she free him then?
She did, Alex said. But unfortunately it was too late. He died in her arms.
Snow White let out a distressed sigh.
I see, she said.
But they were together, Connor said. One last time.
So what happens now?
Alex asked. Do we clear her name? Do we tell the world the truth about her?
I'm afraid that's easier said than done, Snow White said. I think the best thing we can do now, to honor her memory, is to live every day with the compassion and understanding no one ever gave her.
The twins looked to each other and exchanged sad smiles.
I think what I've learned from all of this is that villains are mostly just people villainized by circumstance, Alex said.
Snow White nodded, sincerely looking down at the heart.
I agree, Snow White said. That's the tragic lesson we can learn from the Evil Queen.
The dungeon was a miserable place, as Goldilocks was learning firsthand. Her cell was small and damp, the smell was horrible, and the light was scarce. Occasionally, a rat would try to run into her cell, and Goldilocks would look down at it meanly and intimidate it into running the other way.
Don't even think about it,
she said multiple times to the rodents. It was just past midnight, and all was quiet in the dungeon. Goldilocks couldn't sleep in her first night of captivity. She knew this day had been bound to come, but as she sat on the hard floor, she couldn't help but feel cheated that it had come so soon. Suddenly, a pair of footsteps echoed throughout the dungeon as someone from the palace above made their way down the spiral staircase and past the row of cells. A young woman in a long hooded cloak slowly made her way to Goldilocks' cell.
"Gross! Ew! Yuck!"
the woman said after each step. Goldilocks recognized the prissy voice.
"Hello,"
Red Riding Hood whispered awkwardly.
"What are you doing down here?"
Goldilocks asked. "Have you come to personally escort me to my execution?"
"Please keep your voice down," Red said. "The gods don't know I'm in here."
"What do you want?"
Goldilocks asked her.
"I've come to let you out," Red said.
"What?"
Goldilocks said, completely shocked.
"Why?"
"Because I've decided to make things right," Red said, very haughtily.
"Go ahead, then. Let me out," Goldilocks said, almost daring her.
She didn't get her hopes up. She knew there had to be a catch.
"I will, but first, I wrote you a letter,"
Red said, and pulled out a piece of parchment from inside of her cloak.
"You want me to read your letter first?"
Goldilocks said, not even attempting to disguise the annoyance in her voice.
"Of course not. I know you probably can't read,"
Red said sincerely. Goldilocks raised her eyebrows.
"You're so lucky these bars are between us right now."
"That was just a joke. Lighten up, Goldie."
"I've been working on this all night and thought it was best if I came down here and read it to you myself,"
Red said.
"I'm listening,"
Goldilocks said, and crossed her arms. Red cleared her throat.
"Dear Goldilocks,"
Red began reading.
"I'm sorry I ruined your life." "Wow, I feel better already after saying that part. Looking back on it, I know sending you that letter when we were kids wasn't the right thing to do. I never meant to force you into being a fugitive. I thought the bears would scratch you up or eat one of your arms at most."
"Is this letter supposed to make me want to kill you less?"
Goldilocks asked.
"Let me finish first,"
Red said.
"I've loved Jack for just as long as you have, but he has chosen to love a less attractive, less intelligent, and less wealthy girl instead. He loves you, not me, and this is the hardest thing I will ever have to realize. I hope that by freeing you from the dungeon tonight, you can forgive me. Love, your friend, Her Majesty the Great, Queen Red Riding Hood."
Goldilocks had never been so annoyed in her entire life.
"It took you all night to write that?"
she asked.
"Yes, and I meant every word,"
Red said.
"What do you say? Am I forgiven? Are we even?"
"Open the door first," Goldilocks said.
She would have rather spent the rest of her life in the cell than spend another 5 minutes with Red Riding Hood. Red fussed with a pair of golden keys and eventually found the right one to unlock the cell door. Goldilocks stepped out of her cell, looked Red directly in the eye, and slapped her hard across the face.
"Ouch!"
Red yelled.
"There, now we're even,"
Goldilocks said.
"I know I deserve that,"
Red said, holding her hand against the side of her face.
"Now put this on before we get caught and both end up behind these bars."
Red threw her cloak over Goldilocks, and the two women hurried out of the dungeon. They crept through the halls of the palace and made their way past the front lawns. They walked through a forest for a little ways and came to Ugly Duckling Pond. Porridge was waiting for Goldilocks by the edge of the pond. At first, Goldilocks could not see, but behind the horse, impatiently waiting, was Jack. Goldilocks stopped dead in her tracks.
"What are you doing here?"
she asked him, although she already knew the answer.
"I did it, Jack! I told you I could!"
Red said with a big smile.
"I'm coming with you," Jack said.
"Jack, we've been through this. You can't come with me, especially now. I'll be wanted more than ever before once they discover I'm missing,"
Goldilocks said.
"Every day without you is ruined," Jack said. "I won't spend any more of my life wondering if the woman I love is dead or alive or rotting in some prison. I thought I lost you back at the castle, and I refuse to ever feel that way again. I'm coming with you, even if it means I have to chase you on foot."
Tears filled the eyes of both women for different reasons. Both of their hearts belonged to the same man. Red would have given everything she owned to have heard him say that to her.
Are you really willing to spend every minute of every day running from the law for the rest of your life just to be with me? Goldilocks asked.
I would give up anything to spend every minute of every day with you, Jack said.
He hopped onto Porridge's back and reached his hand down to help her up. Goldilocks's head was filled with reasons and excuses not to let him do this. She wanted to convince him to stay and live his life, but this time, her heart wouldn't let her. She took Jack's hand and jumped onto Porridge with him. Together, they took the reins and charged into the night. By sunrise, they would be the most wanted fugitives in the world, but, at last, they were in each other's arms.
You're welcome! No need to thank me. I'll be fine!
Red called out after them as they disappeared into the forest.
I'll be fine!
Red fell to her knees and sobbed. Tears poured down her face, and her makeup ran with them. She had never cried this hard in her entire life.
That was a very noble thing you did, said a voice behind her.
She turned and saw Froggy leaning down by the pond, collecting flies into a large glass jar.
How much longer until this feeling goes away?
Red asked.
I'm afraid traces of that feeling may be with you for the rest of your life, Froggy said. But it'll get better over time.
I thought helping her escape would help the pain, but it only made it worse,
Red said. Froggy leaned down beside her.
It doesn't matter how greatly you've been hurt, or how much you're hurting. It's what you do with the pain that counts, he said. You could cry for years, and rightfully so, or you could choose to learn and grow from it. Take it from me. I spent years hiding in a hole, afraid to come out because of what people would think of me. But one day, I decided to leave, and I ended up saving lives.
Red dried her tears on his coat. He hadn't offered it, but he didn't mind.
You're very smart for a frog,
Red said with a big smile.
Perhaps now, with all of my dreams crushed, I can devote all that empty headspace and energy to my kingdom. I am queen, after all.
That sounds like a wonderful idea, Froggy said.
He offered his arm to her and helped the saddened queen to her feet. They escorted each other back to the palace.
What is your name, by the way? Red asked him. I never learned it.
He hesitated.
Froggy, he said. Just call me Froggy.
Chapter 23, A Royal Invitation. Alex and Connor were both given their own chambers in the palace. It had been the first time since their stay at the Shoe Inn that they had slept in a bed, and it was the first night since they arrived in the Land of Stories that they had gotten a full night's rest. They were so exhausted that they slept until mid-afternoon the next day. It was strange for them to sleep apart from each other. Alex and Connor both woke up every hour or so, each looking for the other, and had to remind themselves where they were and that they were finally safe. The palace servants had taken their t-shirts and jeans to wash, and the twins were given clothes to wear in the meantime. Alex was given a beautiful scarlet dress with fur around the cuffs and neck. Connor, against his will, wore a button-up shirt with a collar far too ruffled for his taste and a pair of bloomers. For the first time in 2 weeks, they were dressed like they belonged there. The entire palace had been buzzing with the news of Goldilocks' escape and Jack's disappearance. The twins couldn't help but smile behind the backs of the frantic soldiers they passed in the halls. They knew that, wherever Jack and Goldilocks were, they were together. The twins offered to go meet the fairy godmother with Froggy, but he wouldn't allow it just yet.
After the journey you've had, I insist you stay a day or two to catch your breath, Froggy said.
And so they stayed for the next couple of days. They ate every meal with Queen Snow White and King Chandler in the massive dining hall. Snow White told the twins amazing stories as they ate, about growing up in the palace, living with the dwarfs, and the different reactions she'd encountered when people had thought she'd come back from the dead. Snow White invited the seven dwarfs over for dinner one night. The twins had wondered why one half of the table in the dining hall was significantly lower than the other, until the dwarfs marched in and took their places around it. Alex and Connor laughed and laughed until their stomachs hurt at the stories they told. Connor beat all seven of the dwarfs and Froggy in a game of cards and took all their gold coins. It was the most fun the twins had had since they'd arrived in the fairy tale world. But things became awkward once Connor asked King Chandler, "Why were you so interested in a dead girl anyway?" The twins spent their days in the enormous palace library. Alex scanned through every book on every shelf, looking for anything that could put them on a path to find a new way home. It took her 3 days to go through all the books, but she found nothing. Connor watched her from a sofa every day while enjoying dessert after dessert from the kitchen.
"I think it's time we left this place," Alex told Connor.
"You want to leave?" Connor asked. "Why? This place is great."
"I don't want to overstay our welcome," Alex said.
We're not going to find a way home just sitting around a palace. Froggy said he would help us look. The sooner we start, the sooner we'll be home. Besides, despite what she may do to us, we promised Froggy we would let him take us to the fairy godmother. Maybe if she isn't too mad at us for breaking the glass slipper, she could give us a tip on how to get home.
I guess, Connor said, sorrowfully looking down at the cake he was enjoying. His eyes suddenly lit up. You know, there's something we haven't tried.
What's that? Alex asked. He stood up, closed his eyes, and began knocking his heels together.
There's no place like home, there's no place like home, Connor shouted. He opened one eye and was disappointed to see that he was still in the same place. Just thought I would try it.
The next day, the twins packed up all their things and dressed in their own clothes. They tossed the saber from the deepest sea into the fireplace of Alex's room, destroying it, just as they had promised the seafoam spirit. They had just arranged to leave with Froggy after noon that day when Sir Grant found them with some news.
We've received a message for you, Sir Grant said.
Curious, the twins quickly followed him to the dining hall, where Snow White, Red Riding Hood, and Froggy stood around excitedly. The queens were each holding bright envelopes. A messenger from another kingdom blew his horn upon seeing the twins and presented them with an identical envelope.
Cinderella had her baby, Snow White told the twins. It's a girl!
The twins eagerly opened the envelope. It was white and addressed to Alex and Connor Wishington. A golden wax seal on the back was in the shape of a glass slipper. The invitation said,
His Highness King Chance Charming and Her Royal Majesty Queen Cinderella cordially invite you to an exclusive celebration of the birth of their child, the unnamed princess, at their palace tomorrow afternoon.
How wonderful, Alex said. But why are we invited?
Beats me, Connor said. Maybe she needs babysitters.
I wasn't expecting to be invited either, Red said. Elected queens are usually left out.
So you're usually left out? Connor asked.
Red turned the same shade as her coat and didn't answer.
Are we going to go? Connor asked.
Do you honestly think I'm going to miss this? Alex asked. Besides, we should return the glass slipper and the pieces of the other one to Cinderella. It's the right thing to do.
What about Froggy? Connor asked.
Froggy made a gesture like he was calming a fire.
Oh, don't worry about me, Froggy said. I wasn't personally invited, so I don't want to intrude. I've never cared too much for the Charming Kingdom anyway.
Nonsense, Red said. You'll come as my guest, and I won't hear any more of it.
She held her head high. Froggy knew he wasn't getting out of this one.
We'll go see the baby princess, and then we'll find the fairy godmother with Froggy afterward, Alex decided. Hopefully, she'll still turn you back into a human.
You mean you're going to become human? Red asked, with a hand over her chest.
Yes, Froggy said. Long story.
Why didn't you just say so? Red said. You have no idea how this changes how I feel about you. Although, I must say I am very proud of myself for being friendly to a, well, whatever it is that you are now.
If Froggy had eyebrows, they would both be raised.
Come with me right now, Red said, and linked his arm in hers. Let's go plan our outfits for tomorrow.
She led Froggy out of the room. He looked back at the twins, his eyes saying, Help! But they were too busy holding in laughs to rescue him. By that afternoon, the carriages were loaded and the journey into the Charming Kingdom began. Snow White and King Chandler rode in one carriage, and the twins rode in the other with Froggy and Red. They were surrounded by a fleet of soldiers the entire way.
Now this is the way to travel, Connor said.
The twins kept pointing out familiar land that they had traveled across during their journey. It inspired them to tell Froggy and Red all about the adventures they had had. The Frogman and the Queen were all ears. Froggy croaked a couple times during the twins' animated retellings, especially during the part about the trolls and goblins. Given their audience, they left out the part about sneaking into Red's castle and being partially responsible for the fire. The twins kept stopping each other to say,
We can never tell Mom about that part, when they got to the more dangerous moments of their trip.
The carriages traveled through the night and arrived at Cinderella's palace the following afternoon. Rose petals filled the air and bells rang from afar as the entire kingdom celebrated the birth of their future ruler. Froggy started acting very strange as soon as they arrived. He was shaky with nerves. The palace made him anxious for some reason. The group climbed the never-ending steps to the front entrance and was escorted down the red-carpeted hall and into the ballroom. The ballroom was virtually empty and seemed much bigger when not filled with people dancing. Cinderella was sitting on her throne, cradling her newborn daughter. Sitting around her in a big circle, some in chairs and some on the floor, were Sleeping Beauty, Rapunzel, and the entire Happily Ever After assembly. Sleeping Beauty's and Rapunzel's husbands congratulated King Chance in the corner of the room.
"What are you going to name her?"
Rapunzel asked. She was beautiful, with hair that matched the lock Alex and Connor had collected for the wishing spell. She wore it up in the biggest bun the twins had ever seen, and it still ran down her back and trailed behind her.
"I can't decide," Cinderella said.
"You should name her after her Aunt Rapunzel,"
Rapunzel suggested, and everyone laughed.
"I love you, Rapunzel, but I love my daughter too much to ever do that to her," Cinderella said, and everyone laughed even harder.
"Look who's here,"
Cinderella said as soon as she looked up to see the group walking toward them. Everyone was happy to see Snow White and Chandler, but the room grew very tense when they saw Alex and Connor walking in behind them with the giant frogman. Everyone looked at them uncomfortably, as if they were naked.
"Aren't those the twins who stole the glass slipper?"
King Chance said, stepping forward from the clump of kings.
"No, we tried telling you, it wasn't us,"
said Alex, panicked, afraid history was about to repeat itself and she and her brother would be chased by guards.
"Everyone relax," Cinderella laughed. "No one stole anything. I invited them here. My fairy godmother wanted to have a word with them."
"What does she want with them, dear?"
King Chance asked his wife.
"I'm not sure," Cinderella said.
Alex and Connor exchanged looks of dread. This must be even more serious than the broken slipper.
"We may have accidentally broken one of your shoes," Alex said.
Connor had never seen her look so ashamed.
"It wasn't really our fault," Connor said. "I mean, it was, but it was a really complicated situation and would never have happened unless it absolutely had to."
"Oh, that's no trouble at all," Cinderella said. "I can't tell you how many times I've broken them myself. The fairy godmother always fixes them when she visits. That's probably all she wants. She'll be here soon."
The twins sighed with such relief that they shrank a few inches. Connor patted his sister on the shoulder, as he knew she'd been stressing about it. If there was ever a group of people she wanted to leave a good impression with, it was this one. Snow White, Red, Alex, and Connor joined the women huddled around the baby. King Chandler dragged Froggy over to where the men were in the corner and introduced them to him. Froggy awkwardly shook their hands. He was the first frogman ever to be inside the palace.
"Look at her," Snow White said, looking down at the baby princess. "She's beautiful."
"She looks just like you, Cinderella," Red said. "I was a beautiful baby myself."
The princess was indeed beautiful. She was only a few days old, but looked just like her mother, with auburn hair and bright eyes.
"I'm so glad to see you two are all right," Sleeping Beauty said to the twins. "Did everything work out for you?"
She winked at them. The twins looked down at their feet.
"Not so great, unfortunately," Alex said.
She reached into her bag and pulled out the spindle.
"Thank you for letting us borrow this, though."
"My pleasure,"
Sleeping Beauty said, and took the spindle from her.
"And Connor, I have to thank you for your, what did you call it again? Oh yes, the rubber band trick. We've been trying it on a few citizens, and it appears to be helping quite a bit."
Connor was beaming.
"I told you so,"
he said, a rare thing for him to say.
"Snow White, I heard they finally found your stepmother," Cinderella said. "Congratulations, that must be such a relief."
The other queens and fairies added their congratulations on the subject. However, Snow White didn't seem happy about it.
"Is everything all right, Snow?" Sleeping Beauty asked. "Yes, of course," Snow White said. "It's all very bittersweet."
"Bittersweet?"
Emeralda asked.
"It's a long story," Snow White said. "Wonderful, I love stories,"
Rapunzel said, and made herself more comfortable sitting on the floor. Snow White looked at the twins. They smiled very supportively at her, encouraging her to tell them everything they already knew. Snow White told the queens and fairies all about her stepmother's past. She explained to them about the enchantress taking her away from her family, how her fiancé was cursed into the mirror, and about the Heart of Stone. She left out the part about helping her escape, however, because just as the twins had kept details from Red Riding Hood, Snow White knew her audience. Many of the women looked as if they were on the verge of tears. Some held their hands over their mouths. Others just shook their heads in disbelief.
"I can't believe it," Rosette said. "That's the saddest story I've ever heard," said Coral,
petting the walking fish, who rested peacefully in her lap.
"And even when the whole world hated her, she still never quit trying to free the man she loved," Sleeping Beauty said. "She never gave up hope," Skyline said.
Cinderella sat straight up in her throne.
"Hope, that's it,"
she said, looking down at her daughter.
"That's what I'm going to name her. Princess Hope Charming, the future queen."
"It's beautiful,"
King Chance said,
and kissed his newborn daughter on the forehead. Everyone nodded and clapped their approval.
"Then I believe it's time we christened Princess Hope with a few gifts," Emeralda said, and gestured to the fairies to get on their feet.
One by one, the fairies each blessed the princess with a christening spell. They gave her gifts of wisdom and health, of compassion and wealth, of pride and discipline, and lastly, beauty, although she already had plenty to spare.
"Would you like to hold her?"
Cinderella asked Alex.
"Me?"
Alex asked, pointing to herself.
"Yes, I would be honored."
Cinderella gently placed her daughter into Alex's arms. Alex wondered if the baby had any idea where or who it was. Did she know how special she already was, just by having been born? Did she know she was a future queen of a kingdom in the land of stories? The baby yawned. Perhaps she did know, and was exhausted just thinking about it. The doors of the ballroom opened, and the twins saw a familiar face coming toward them. It was Sir Lambton, and he had an enormous grin on his face.
"Your Majesty, the fairy godmother has arrived," Sir Lambton said.
"Oh, splendid, Lambton," Cinderella said. "Would you let her know where we are?"
"Certainly, Your Highness," Lambton said. "But before she joins you, she would like to have a word with the children. Alone."
All the heads in the room turned to Alex and Connor, who gulped in unison.
"She's waiting in the clock tower," Lambton said.
The twins slowly walked out of the ballroom with Lambton. He guided them through the palace, staircase after staircase, up to the clock tower.
"It's great to see you two again," Lambton told the twins. "The fairy godmother has been looking for you two for quite some time now."
"That can't be good," Connor said. "Are we in trouble?" Lambton didn't answer. The twins grew very worried by his silence. Alex pulled out the map and the journal from her bag, along with a piece of the glass slipper.
"If she's upset about something, we'll just explain ourselves from the very beginning," Alex said. "We haven't done anything wrong, have we?"
"Of course not," Connor said. "Our intentions were always very good with everything we did. Right?" The twins and Lambton ran out of stairs to climb and found a round door that led inside the clock tower. Lambton knocked lightly on the door.
"Come in," said a voice from inside.
"Here we go,"
Alex said to Connor.
"Fingers crossed."
Lambton led the twins inside. The clock tower was gigantic. The twins felt like they were in the inside of an enormous antique clock, as there were giant turning gears and mechanisms everywhere you looked. They could see the entire kingdom through the clock face. A short woman was standing with her back to the door, looking out over the kingdom. She wore a long, hooded, light blue overcoat that sparkled like the night sky.
"I'll leave you alone now," Lambton said.
He promptly shut the door behind him and left the twins alone with the fairy godmother. The twins cautiously tiptoed closer to the woman.
"Excuse me?" Connor asked. "Miss Fairy Godmother, you wanted to see us?"
The fairy godmother turned to face the children. She was a beautiful older woman with kind eyes and a radiant smile. Her hair was light brown and was worn up in a gorgeous hairdo. The twins froze.
"Grandma?"
Alex gasped.
Chapter 24, A Fairy's Tale.
"I'm so glad you're all right," their grandmother said, and rushed over to the twins.
She gave them the biggest and longest hug they had ever received from her.
"Your mother and I have been so worried."
The twins didn't hug her back. They couldn't. They could barely breathe. They were surprised they were still standing, because neither of them could feel their legs.
"How are you?"
their grandmother asked.
"Are you hurt? Are you hungry? Do you need anything?"
"Grandma?"
Alex asked softly.
"Is it really you?"
"It's me, sweetheart," she said. "I'm really here."
"You're the fairy godmother?"
Connor asked. She smiled at them.
"I am,"
she said, with sadness in her voice.
"I'm so sorry. I never meant for you to find out this way."
Their grandmother stopped speaking. Her gaze had landed on the object Alex was holding.
"Good heavens! What on earth are you doing with your father's old journal?"
she asked. Alex and Connor felt like they had swallowed their own hearts.
"This is Dad's journal?"
Alex asked, with big, bewildered eyes.
"We've been following Dad's journal this whole time?"
Connor asked.
"I think I'm going to faint," Alex said.
Their grandmother pulled out a long crystal wand from inside her overcoat. She waved it, and a sofa magically appeared in the clock tower. She took the twins by the hands and sat them down on the sofa and let them catch their breath. It took the twins by surprise. Even though she was the fairy godmother, Alex and Connor weren't expecting their grandmother to be capable of such magic. Grandma took the journal from Alex and flipped the pages, amazed that it had somehow found its way into their possession.
"Where did you get this?" she asked.
"It was given to us by our friend Froggy," Alex said. "We've been following it since we got here." "We've been hunting down all the items for the wishing spell," Connor said.
"The wishing spell?"
their grandmother asked anxiously.
"No wonder it was impossible to find you."
"You and Dad are actually from here then?" Alex asked. "I wasn't making it all up in my head." "And Dad wrote that journal?" Connor asked, his mind still stuck on the subject.
"Yes, yes, yes," their grandmother said. "It's all true. I gave this journal to him when he was a boy. I'm glad it was useful."
The twins had gotten used to their heads spinning with questions, but now they were spinning out of control. They didn't know which questions to ask first.
"So Dad wanted the wishing spell so he could travel into our world?" Connor asked.
"He wrote that he fell in love with a woman in our world," Alex said. Could it be...
"Your mother, yes," their grandmother said.
Alex and Connor exchanged a look, each seeing how the other was processing the information. Neither looked less shocked than the other.
"How long have you been a fairy godmother?"
Alex asked.
"Why didn't you ever tell us any of this?"
Connor asked.
"I know you probably have 100 questions," their grandmother said. "But before you worry yourselves too much, let me explain."
"Please," Connor said. Their grandmother took a deep breath. She didn't know where or how to start.
"We always planned on telling you when you were older," she said. "Your father was counting down the days until he could bring you here and show you around. Unfortunately, he never got a chance to. After he passed away, you two were going through so much already, your mother and I didn't want to overwhelm you, so we decided to hold off."
"So Mom knows about this place?" Alex asked.
"She's never been here, but she knows enough," their grandmother said. "Your father and I, on the other hand, were both born and raised in this world. Before your father was born, and when I was just a young fairy in training, I accidentally discovered your world."
"So, your cabin in the woods, your blue car, it was all just for show?" Connor asked.
"Certainly not," Grandma said. "I stayed at that cabin during my travels, and I love that blue car. I wish people in this world knew about automobiles."
"So how did you end up in our world to begin with?" Alex asked.
"It happened by total accident," she said. "I had recently just finished a tour of the kingdoms, traveling to those who needed a helping hand, and I was anxious to help more. I waved my wand around me, I closed my eyes, and thought with all my heart, I wish to go someplace where people need me the most, thinking I would just end up in a small village in the Northern Kingdom. When I opened my eyes, I knew I wasn't in the kingdoms anymore. I kept it to myself for years before telling any of the other fairies about it. I met a group of children there who showed me around. I was fascinated by their world, but they were even more fascinated with stories about mine. They didn't know anything about magic or fairies before I came along. Their world was so consumed with war and famine and disease, it was all they knew. They would sit for hours and listen to my stories about the world I came from. It seemed to take them away from all their troubles. I saw how the stories inspired them, how they gave them hope, how they gave them courage and strength, and how they learned lessons from them. It made children without families learn to love and trust a little more than they had before. And it put the sparkle back in the eyes of the children who were ill and had had their childhoods taken from them. I decided from then on that I would do as much as I could to make our stories, our history, as known as possible. To date, I'm the only one who has ever had the gift to move between worlds, and I found it to be a great responsibility. I recruited Mother Goose and a few of the fairies to go with me into your world and spread these stories of ours. We found the children who needed to hear them the most, the ones who were down on their luck and needed a little magic, and the term fairy tales was born. Your world was moving so fast and growing so large, we couldn't do it by ourselves anymore. So we asked people like the Brothers Grimm and Hans Christian Andersen and a few others to help us over the years."
"So there is a time difference," Alex said.
"Your world moves so much faster than ours," Grandma said. "I visited once a week, and every time I returned, it seemed as if decades and decades had gone by."
"That's why the stories have been in our world for so long," Connor said.
"Oh no," Alex exclaimed. "Mom, does that mean she's grown into an old woman while we've been here?"
"No," their grandmother said. "You see, children,
There was a time difference, but then something truly magical happened that changed all of that.
What? Connor asked.
You two were born,
Grandma said with a smile. The twins looked at each other amazed. Why are we so special? Connor asked.
Because sometimes magic has a mind of its own, she said.
Grandma looked down at her hands and at her wedding ring.
Your grandfather loved your world and traveled with me whenever I went. He was the love of my life, but he unfortunately died shortly before your father was born. I raised your father here on my own, but I continued to visit the other world from time to time, although it was painful because it reminded me of your grandfather. Your father was always an adventurous boy. From an early age, he was constantly running off and exploring different lands throughout the kingdoms. He was always very curious about the other world, and I promised to take him one day when he was an adult. Many years later, he came with us to a children's hospital to read stories to the sick children. Your mother had just started nursing there, and I knew from the minute he laid eyes on her that his heart didn't belong to himself anymore. Naturally, I forbid him from staying or ever coming back with the fairies and myself again. It was selfish of me, but I was scared he would get lost in the time difference of the worlds and would live the rest of his life without me. I couldn't lose my son after losing your grandfather. But his love for your mother was too strong, and he found his own way back by using the wishing spell. I had no choice but to give him my blessing and let him go. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do as a mother. However, as soon as you two were born, the most peculiar thing happened. Your world and this world slowly started to move at similar speeds. It's the greatest magic I have seen in my lifetime. Being your father's children means that you have part of this world inside of you. You always have. You two are the first children of both worlds. You're the bridge that connects them.
The twins were so relieved to know that their mother would be the same age when they returned.
You mean, Alex began to ask, but paused because it almost seemed too good to be true. That Connor and I are part fairy?
I suppose so, if you put it in that way, she said. Alex placed both of her hands over her heart, and tears came to her eyes. Connor rolled his eyes and sighed.
That's wonderful, Alex said.
Oh, great, Connor said sarcastically. The guys at school can never hear about this.
How else did you think you set off my old storybook? Grandma said.
Alex sat straight up in her seat. She remembered the night in bed when she was holding the land of stories and wishing with all her heart to travel inside it. The first night she discovered it wasn't an average book.
You mean I did that? She asked. I made the land of stories bring us here?
Yes, Grandma said.
A proud smile filled her face. Alex couldn't believe it.
She was magic. She'd made it happen.
It all makes so much sense now, Alex said. In the castle the Evil Queen was hiding in, my tear activated the wishing spell, and I saw my reflection in one of her magic mirrors. I had wings. I thought I was just seeing things.
Evil Queen? Their grandmother asked. It sounds like you two have had even more of an adventure here than I thought.
You can say that again, Connor said.
I look forward to hearing all about it, their grandmother said. Your mother has been worried sick. She's had to give your school every excuse known to man as to why you two have been gone. I think it's time I took you home.
Home. She was going to take them home. Never had a word sounded so beautiful.
Can you do that? Connor asked.
You'd be amazed at the things your grandma can do, she laughed.
But her look faded as she sadly looked down at the journal that belonged to her late son.
Amazing, isn't it? Even in death, your father managed to show you around this place. It had always been his dream.
Alex and Connor had always thought that their father was amazing, but until now, they never knew just how amazing he actually was. The twins and their grandmother left the clock tower and caught Sir Lambton leaning on the door, closely listening to their conversation. He escorted them back down the stairs to the ballroom.
I knew your father,
Lambton whispered into the twins' ears.
We grew up together. I knew you must have been his children the very second I saw you. That's why I put the glass slipper in your bag.
The twins couldn't even acknowledge it with a smile. Their minds were already overloaded. They walked into the ballroom, and everyone stood at the side of the fairy godmother.
Everyone, please have a seat. I've come to bless the baby princess with a gift, and then I'm going to take my grandchildren home, she said, and put her arms around Alex and Connor.
Grandchildren? Cinderella asked. I had no idea. Why, that practically makes us family, she said, smiling at the twins.
Did you hear that, Alex? Connor said, leaning close to his sister. Cinderella herself just said we're practically her family.
I know, Alex peeped, and I'm trying not to cry.
The fairy godmother took the newborn princess into her arms. The twins were excited to see their grandmother in action.
She's beautiful, dear, she said to Cinderella. My gift to the princess will be bravery. She may need it in the years to come.
The fairy godmother kissed the newborn's cheek. Her lips left a sparkly mark on the infant's face, and it slowly faded away as the gift was absorbed.
Before I go, I have one more gift to give, the fairy godmother said, and took out her long crystal wand. Will the gentleman known as Froggy please come to the front of the room?
Froggy, who had been partially hiding behind the charming kings, cautiously met the fairy godmother in the middle of the room.
Thank you so much for looking out for my grandchildren, the twins' grandmother said. I will never be able to thank you enough. But for now, I'd like to take away the curse put upon you.
Froggy's mouth opened extra wide. He kept looking back and forth between the twins and the fairy godmother.
I,
he started, but couldn't finish. The fairy godmother waved her wand, and the curse cast upon him blew away like dandelion seeds in the wind. Froggy wasn't Froggy anymore. He was a man. He was a very attractive man, too, with dark hair and eyes that illuminated the entire room. It was shocking for the twins to see him as anything else.
Charlie? King Chan said. Is that you?
The charming brothers all leaned closer to him. They stared at him as if they were looking at a ghost.
Hello, brother, Froggy said. It's been a long time.
The charming's amazement eventually wore off and turned into celebration. They ran over to their long-lost brother and vigorously embraced him. The room erupted with joy at the long-overdue reunion. Red Riding Hood was quietly blushing to herself. She was looking at Prince Charlie in a completely new way. He wasn't the friendly frogman who'd saved her in the collapsing castle anymore. He was husband material.
We thought you were dead,
Chandler said, rubbing his brother's head.
We searched every kingdom for you,
Chase said, patting him on the back.
Now you know why you couldn't find me,
Charlie said, and shrugged.
Why didn't you tell us?
Chance asked.
I was ashamed, Charlie said. I didn't know any better. I thought I had to hide. Please forgive me.
The twins couldn't believe it. Now they knew why he'd been acting so strange when they had arrived.
So, you're a prince? Alex asked, with a gigantic smile on her face. You forgot to mention that part.
My apologies, Charlie said. I could have sworn I mentioned it over lily pad tea.
They laughed together. Charlie ran over the twins and hugged them almost as tightly as his brothers had just hugged him.
Thank you, Charlie said, for inspiring me to come out of that hole in the ground.
Thank you, Alex said.
I'm still calling you Froggy, Connor said.
The fairy godmother waved her crystal wand one last time, and a door appeared in the middle of the ballroom. She walked over to the twins and placed a hand on both of their shoulders.
It's time, she said.
The twins recognized the door immediately. It was the front door of their rental house. They'd never been so happy to see it. A light was shining through it. They knew their mother was waiting for them on the other side. All the kings, queens, and fairies in the room looked at Alex and Connor sweetly. Although most of them had had their predicaments with the twins, they were sad to see them go.
Say goodbye, Grandma told the twins.
Connor couldn't wait any longer and ran straight to the door.
Bye!
Connor yelled at everyone in the room without looking at them. He ran through the door and disappeared, home at last. Alex looked up at her grandmother.
Will we ever come back?
She asked, hoping with all her heart for the answer she wanted to hear.
Someday, her grandmother said.
Alex took a step toward the men and women she had grown up reading about her entire life. She could have sworn she'd had a dream just like this once. She had been meaning to say something, and decided this might be her last chance to say it.
I know this may not make any sense, but thank you for always being there for me, Alex said. You're the best friends I've ever had.
They didn't quite understand what she meant, but they were all very touched by her words.
Come along, dear,
her grandmother said, and escorted her to the door. Alex wiped away the tears that had been brought on by saying farewell. She couldn't help but smile as she walked through the door with her grandmother, though, because she knew in her heart it wasn't really goodbye.
This has been an Hachette audio production of The Land of Stories, written and read by Christopher Colfer.
Produced by Michelle McGonigal. Directed by Jerry Maybrook. Engineered by Jeremy Wesley at the Media Staff. Post-production by John Colucci. The Land of Stories is also available in print and as an ebook from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2012 by Christopher Colfer. Audio production copyright 2012 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher is unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.